Thank you for listening to You've Got a Lot of Nerd podcast presented by the Hill Country Tech Guys. Stephanie Burns, welcome to the You've Got a Lot of Nerd podcast. It's been a month or so.
It's been a while.
Almost forgot.
Thank you.
Yes. So, Stephanie, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Okay. My name is Stephanie Burns. I'm a clinical dietitian. I also enjoy to do yoga and hiking and water activities like going to the river. I'm supposed to say hanging out with my family as well.
That's important.
But I work at a local rehab center. We specialize in stroke and brain injuries. And so, but yeah, primary focus is nutrition.
We should talk about some of those injuries that you see, but we can loop back to that. Why don't you tell us about your journey to being a dietitian? Like, what did you do, or where did you go to school, and then when did you choose to be a dietitian?
So I started Texas State University in 2004 to become a teacher. And when I did my teacher training in an elementary school, I quickly realized that was not for me. And I was also just like super obsessed with being healthy. There's a word for that now. Let me see if I can think of it. It will come to me. But and so my aunt was like, you know, you're really interested in orthorexia. That's what it's called. When you're like overly obsessed with being healthy. That was totally me.
And like, can, I guess, describe overly obsessed with being healthy.
Where you restrict yourself. Like I wouldn't allow myself to have full fat dairy or fried foods. Or, you know, like super processed foods or, you know, red meat, you know, that kind of thing. So I feel like I have a much better balance now. But yeah, getting back to my journey, you know, my aunt kind of saw that I was interested in nutrition and she told me you could get a degree in nutrition, which I had no idea you could get a degree in nutrition. I didn't even know that was a thing. So I changed my journey to getting my degree in nutrition. And then when I was getting my degree in nutrition, they had different tracks, like you could become a teacher. And I was like, well, that would be cool. I could teach nutrition. Or they had just started the like dietetics track where you could become a clinical dietitian or start the process.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And so I switched gears there, which added a little bit of time to school. But that's okay because I loved getting my degree in nutrition. Like, I feel like I just soaked all of my classes up. Like, I never wanted to miss a class. I wanted to study. I wanted to read every word of every article because it just interested me so, so, so much.
Also, if you'd have finished in 4 years, you would have beat me by a semester, even though I started 2 years earlier than you. But you got to finish at the same time.
That's right. Yes, it all worked out. So yeah, that just really solidified that I, you know, wanted a career in nutrition. And then my first job was a really cool job, or my first big girl job. I was a project manager of a grant that helped people through their path in nutrition. And by helping other people, I realized I really needed to become a dietitian. That's, you know, the, you know, pinnacle of having a career in nutrition is to become a registered dietitian. So I applied for the dietetic internship at Texas State University. I got in. Luckily, I was hired right out of my internship at a local hospital. I worked there for many years. And then, you know, had a baby, took a step back. And then now I've found a full-time job at my at the rehab that I work at. And I've been there for 6 years now. So it's been a good journey.
It's crazy to think you've been at the current rehab hospital for 6 years. Wow. It seems like CTMC was just yesterday.
Yeah, and I was at CTMC for 8 years, and there was some overlap there.
That's
where I was
yeah,
at
that's right.
working at
that's
both
right.
hospitals at the same time. And that's the great thing about being in a clinical position. You can work PRN, part-time, full-time, or a combination thereof.
And to add a little anecdote to, and I'm going to try to get this right, to Stephanie's story, because she went from like, I graduated, and now we're here today. And that was like 10 years or 15 years, whatever it was. But when you, I want to say you did your diet, well, first off, your dietetic internship, or describe your dietetic internship.
So the dietetic internship is a 9 to 10 month program where you are basically working for free, which is really hard for
It's free.
People
you don't make any money.
You actually pay a lot of money to work for free. And you work under other dietitians. And so now as a dietitian, I'm a preceptor for lots of students who are going through their dietetic internship. And I think at this point, and you did the math for me, I think at this point I've probably had over 80 students that are dietetic interns.
By the way, she's an award-winning dietitian.
Congratulations.
Yes, a long time ago I did get an award for being an awesome preceptor. I like to think I still am.
Yeah, I think it's going to come around again. Because you're booked up till 2024?
Yeah, like summer of 2024. Like I have interns throughout.
Yeah, that's awesome. Mm-hmm,
until then, yeah.
Oh, yeah, so dietetic internship. So you went through, you did it. And there were a few places where you, that I think that really stood out to you. But you happened to be at CTMC, which is right down the road from our house. And I think you did it. I mean, you do a kick-ass job.
Thank you.
Wherever you go.
Mm-hmm.
And they happen to have a job opening for, was it part-time or PRN?
Yes. So I started part-time at CTMC, and then within a few months was offered a full-time position, and then was offered a lead position. So that was a lot of fun to kind of fulfill my career that way. And then I got pregnant with our daughter, Ella. And so after I had her, that's when I took a step back to part-time. And then eventually I started PRN at my current full-time job. So, yeah, that's the great thing about being in the clinical field is just the flexibility depending on what's going on. But very happy to be working full-time again and very happy that my current job offers me a lot of flexibility.
Mm-hmm. And your job is going to be in demand for...
Oh, yeah.
Forever.
For sure. Yeah.
Like, anybody, I don't see this getting better.
Yeah. Is interested in getting a career in nutrition. I mean, it is very competitive. It is very highly science based, but there's a lot of job security. It's a super fulfilling job. And I love my career. And I don't think everybody can say that, you know, and I get to use my degree and my education. So I'm just feel really fulfilled and happy about that.
Yeah. I got a degree. Took me 6.5 years and I've yet to make a cent off of it, so. Mm-hmm.
But you use it for your own personal gain.
Yeah, yes. I guess the ESS portion of it I do for athletics type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Oh yeah. So your dietetic internship. So Stephanie did a kick-ass job. She replied to CTMC. She was like, "You're definitely getting this." She's like, "Oh, I don't know." I was like, "She got it." And then she got the part-time job, and I told her, "Like, it's not going to be long before you get bumped up to full-time," and like a month later. So what was funny is, of course, Ella, I mean, Stephanie likes to plan all this. She likes to plan things out well ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, I'm going to do all of this stuff in my spare time. I'm going to get so much done around the house. She's like, no, you're not. She's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, you're going to get promoted to full time. And mm-hmm. like that, you were bumped up. And then like that, you were lead dietitian.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I remember telling my old boss when I was a manager, and I think I'd been a manager 3 years or 4 years. And I told Roger, I was like, man, if Stephanie worked here, she'd already be a director. And I don't know how he took that, but eventually I did become a director there. I do think you'd have got it done in 3 years as opposed to me taking 5 years.
I don't know about all that.
Yeah. But you do seem to have a fulfilling job that does provide flexibility. So something, I guess, kind of on track or on the same subject. Lots of people like to say they get information from a nutritionist.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also make a dietitian an equivalent. They think that they're the same person.
Yeah.
So explain that.
Sure. Yes, that's a really good question and definitely worth expanding on. So to be a registered dietitian, like I said, and the new requirements for being a registered dietitian is that you actually have to have your master's in nutrition, where I only had my bachelor's.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go through this, 1,000-hour internship. And then you, of course, have to pass like a state exam. So RDs are unique in that we are credentialed, whereas anybody can call themselves a nutritionist. Anybody can take an online course and pay some money and call themselves a nutritionist.
$25. One test.
Now, recently in the past few years, you have the option of calling yourself a registered dietitian nutritionist, which I kind of refuse to do. I just feel like it makes it more confusing to the general public. But I guess, you know, it lets the general public know, like, if you're going to go to a nutritionist, go to a registered dietitian. But again, I just, you know, like, just I like to clarify. Yes, nutritionist and registered dietitian are two different things. So if you need, you know, solid nutrition advice, go to a registered dietitian. And most doctors can give you a referral. And most dietitians either, you know, are part of a group that takes insurance or can be very affordable. But I think like anything else, like if you just, you know, Google nutrition, you really have to look for some solid sources. Otherwise, you're going to get, you know, two different stories and two different sides. And a lot of people, unfortunately, go with the side that is most convenient for them.
That's right.
Or that they agree with the most, that might not actually be healthy. It might actually be harmful. So I think, you know, everybody kind of thinks that they're an expert in nutrition because everybody eats. And I don't want to overgeneralize. Not everybody's that way. There are some people that that are that way.
I read a blog. I'm an expert.
Yeah. Exactly. So just like anything else, you know, make sure you're getting your information from a credible source.
So keto is your favorite diet. Why don't you tell people about that?
So I used to, you know, be on my high horse about keto and be like, just don't do it. It's terrible. It's awful. But I realize people don't want to hear that. People aren't very receptive to that. So I feel like there are some pros and cons about keto. I feel like for the most part, people do a keto that's convenient for them that might not even be like what keto actually is. So the ketogenic diet actually came from a very specific diet, you know, where most of your macronutrients are coming from fat and a little bit of protein and very little carbs, and that, you know, puts your body into a ketogenic state. And for some people that have seizures, it actually helps resolve their seizures. So for a very small specific population, the keto diet can be life-saving even.
A very, very small.
Yes, very small specific percentage of people who have seizures. Having said that, for the general population, unless you're working super closely with a registered dietitian, it's not realistic and it's not sustainable. I mean, you're talking, you know, getting 75% of your diet from fat and getting, you know, 20% from protein and maybe 5% from carbs. And a lot of people are like, oh, that just means they get to eat steak and bacon all day.
I had a double patty with cheese from McDonald's. Right. Keto lunch.
Exactly.
I felt great afterwards.
Right. Exactly.
I definitely had lots of energy and I wasn't about to fall asleep at the table with Evan.
And especially, you know, working in a facility that specializes in stroke and brain injuries, you know, I think that that kind of diet can absolutely increase your risk of stroke and absolutely increase your risk for heart disease. So a lot of diets, like if you just want like a diet that you can Google that's actually like super healthy, like the Mediterranean diet is a great one. I just heard about the MIND diet, which combines Mediterranean with a few other diets, and it's specifically supposed to be good, you know, for brain health. MIND, like M-I-N-D.
Okay.
So those would be good ones that mainly focus on like fruits and vegetables and whole grains and lean protein and healthy fats, even like glass of wine here and there, which I'm all about. So I think where people like the keto diet is because they cut a lot of crap out of their diet, and I think that's great. I just want to make sure people have a good balance where it's like not like, okay, I'm not gonna have, you know, chips for 30 days until I lose, you know, 5 pounds, and then I'm gonna, you know, go back to eating whatever I want, because that's yo-yo dieting, and it doesn't work for a lot of people.
Yeah, and I think it's Andrew Huberman who talked about, and I might have talked to you about this already, so let me know if I have.
Okay.
But one of the things that he talked about that resonated with me is it can be dieting, exercising, you know, anything where there's a grind involved. And one of the things he talked about was like specifically to exercise, that if you wait to release all of your dopamine. So an example of that would be like, I'm going to work out 5 days this week, and on Friday I'm going to have a tub of ice cream or something like that. When you wait to release your dopamine for that time, like, it really does become a grind and it makes it very difficult to do. But if you figure out a way to enjoy the process
right
throughout the week, and then also have that dopamine release, it becomes sustainable. And I think diet would be the same way.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. And that's what it's all about, is like find something that's sustainable, find something that works for you. And for most people, it's making small changes. Mm-hmm. And it's those small changes that you're going to do for the rest of your life that's going to make the biggest impact. So, you know, like say, for example, you're a soda drinker and you drink several sodas a day. And like, if the only thing that you change in your diet is you go from drinking, you know, 3 sugar sweetened beverages a day to 1 sugar sweetened beverage a day, that's going to make a huge difference. It's going to lower your risk, mm-hmm. you know, for diabetes and heart disease, probably get you to a healthy weight. And so I feel like people really take those small long-term changes for granted, but that's going to get you where you want to be. You want to make changes that are going to last you the rest of your life. Now, having said that, you know, it's all about finding a balance. You know, it's all about being healthy, but also not being deprived. And again, like, you know, my personal journey, I absolutely was depriving myself for probably like 10 or 15 years. And then today I had like, you know, a cheeseburger and french fries for lunch. And I did have, you know, some fruit with that as well. That's not something I do very often, but it's definitely something I do guilt-free because I know that I don't do it very often. I know that I mm-hmm. eat really healthy most of the time. So, you know, it, just because you're saying I'm going to be healthy doesn't mean that you can never have a cheeseburger ever again.
Right.
Also doesn't mean that you should have one every week. But.
speaking of cheeseburgers, mm-hmm. something that doesn't sound right to me is the carnivore diet, mm-hmm. where mm-hmm. they say eat all the meat that you want, eat all the, I guess, the fat too that you want.
I'm not sure.
Don't worry about your saturated fat intake and your LDLs and HDL is good, LDL is bad.
That's
right.
That's right.
Don't worry about your LDLs. You'll be fine.
That definitely does not sound right. And again, that definitely, like when you're having a diet high in saturated fat, absolutely going to set yourself up for heart disease, high cholesterol, and then, you know, risk factors for stroke. So yeah, again, it's imbalanced. And I do feel like in general, America probably eats too much red meat and, you know, focuses too much mm-hmm. on meat. That being said, I do think, you know, as humans, we do need animal products to survive. There are certain things, vitamins and minerals and nutrients that we get from animal products. I just think that as a nation, we're eating too many of the animal products that are high in saturated fat. So, you know, focusing more on those lean proteins like chicken and fish and, you know, low-fat dairy instead of full-fat dairy.
Gotcha. And carb, and lots of, and I hear this all the time, people will say, don't eat carbs or carbohydrates aren't your friend. And I try to explain to them, right. like, they are your friend.
Yes. Yeah.
So explain why you should eat carbs.
So your body needs carbs. Your brain literally lives off of carbs. It's just the right kind of carbs. And I think that's the problem, too, is that in the general American diet, we're not having the right kind of carbs. We're having donuts and chips and hamburgers. And again, I don't want to overgeneralize, but you know, for the most part, I feel like that's what's giving carbs a bad rap, is the prevalent amount of refined carbs that we have available to us. But the kind of carbs that we do need to be eating would be whole grains. So carbs that have fiber. So my favorite, one of my favorite examples is like whole grain pasta. So like having chickpea pasta or lentil pasta that's high in protein, that's high in fiber. So you're getting those carbs, but in a really healthy way that's going to keep you full. And that's even going to give you some protein in there too. You know, like oatmeal, same way. It's high in fiber. It even has some protein in there. And then, you know, choosing like whole grain bread or brown rice or, you know, fruits are a carbohydrate. And fruits are super, super healthy. Even, you know, dairy has some carbohydrates. And so I think a lot of people, you know, when they say carbohydrates, might not be thinking about all of those carbohydrates that are very healthy for us, and that gives us lots of vitamins and minerals and nutrients.
Yeah. Low-fat diets. I think people have started to move away from those. I know that was a thing for a long time, especially with keto and carnivore. Mm-hmm. People are becoming more accepting of fats. But I still hear people say, well, that's got too much fat, or I shouldn't say too much fat, but like fat's not my friend. Can you explain why a low-fat diet's not the way to go either?
Well, I mean, I think it depends on what you mean by low-fat. I definitely think that people need healthy fats in their lives, and some examples of healthy fats would be like nuts, whether it's walnuts or pecans or hazelnuts. Other healthy fats might be olive oil or, and there's so many different, you know, fantastic oils out there these days, like avocado oil or even pecan oil, grapeseed oil. And then avocado is a healthy fat. So all of those fats are definitely your friend. And then there are saturated fats that we need in moderation that most of us are probably getting too much of. And those saturated fats would be like, you know, the cheeseburger and french fries that I had today. Like those would be saturated fats you want to have in moderation. Fried foods, fatty meats like brisket and sausage and hot dogs and hamburgers. Again, doesn't mean you can never have them again, but just having them in moderation.
Right. You talked about some seed oils. That's become a popular thing for people to talk about, like no seed oils at all. They're horrible for you. So my guess is that there are probably some oils from seeds that aren't as good for you. And maybe there was a study where it found like canola seed oil, not good for you. But I think they might be lumping all of them together.
Sure. I mean, from what I understand, you know, the research generally shows if it is a plant-based oil that is liquid at room temperature, it's going to be a healthy source of unsaturated fat. You know, that's going to give you, you know, omega-3s that we need. But if you are having a fat that's solid at room temperature, like coconut oil or butter, that's going to give us the saturated fat that it's going to raise our LDLs and lower HDL that we don't want.
Gotcha. But coconut oil tastes really good.
It does. And, you know, and I have it in my kitchen and I use it on occasion. It does add some really great flavor. But I mean, I've heard of people like, you know, adding it to their coffee, and I would not suggest that. I don't think that's a healthy way to consume
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Yeah. Or mm-hmm. butter in your coffee. Yeah. Like that's
Please
a
don't.
Big thing.
Please don't have a stroke.
So also something that's funny is that Stephanie, like everything, I shouldn't say everything, many things in life, she's like, that's going to cause a stroke. Don't do that. But it's because you work at a rehab hospital with lots of
I do. I see lots of stroke patients. I see lots of brain injury patients. So I feel like I'm hyper aware of what causes a stroke. I'm hyper aware of what causes a brain injury. So my kids are great about wearing a helmet anytime they get on a bike or a skateboard or rollerblades. Ella, our daughter, will tell you, you know, if you climb up too high on a tree and you fall down, it's going to cause a brain injury. So I do feel like I am hyper aware of that because, you know, we want to prevent those as much as possible.
Yeah. You know what else causes brain injuries? Cars rolling down the street and hitting your mailbox. So I wasn't there.
Yeah. So it's super random, but last night, you know, we have the kids in the house, and like 5 minutes ago, they were playing out in the front, that street in front of ours. So we live on a dead end street. There's an activity center across the street. So it's pretty low volume street. So they play in the parking lot across the street. They play, you know, amongst our front driveway all the time. And they just happen to all be inside. And I see this car like rolling down the street with nobody in it. So I tell the kids to stay inside that I'm going to go check it out. And it happens to hit our mailbox. And then the owner comes running down the street, and he's apologizing profusely. He said he thought he put it in park. So it seems like an innocent accident. And I felt like I was comforting him. Like, it's okay. It's going to be okay. It's all right. But of course I'm thinking, like, you could have killed one of our kids.
That's what I
would have
said. I still want
to. Kids were out there.
Yes. Yeah, and they're out there all the time. It just mm-hmm. and not just our kids, but they keep adding up. So
right,
the three
yeah.
normal neighbors, and then now there's two more, and one of them is a little bitty kid.
Yeah, there are lots of neighborhood kids and lots of kids around our house all the time. I feel like my blood pressure is rising just thinking about it.
Yeah, yeah. You texted mm-hmm. me, and then on my radio, I could see Stephanie said this. Would you like to reply? Yes. Mm-hmm. And it just yes. I mean, normally I don't really mess with the messages, but
yeah.
It was slightly
so you just never know. I mean, it could happen to anybody, but yes, if had our kids gotten hit by a car, that probably would have been a brain injury.
Yeah.
Just,
yeah. So what was it, that red car?
Mm-hmm.
That fucking red car. he's really got to do something with it. You can tell it's kind of his pride and joy, but
yeah,
man, it's a piece of shit. Mm-hmm. It really is. He's got to do something with it. But I do want to go knock on the door. I know that was a mistake, but mm-hmm. you have to be hyper vigilant about this because
right. yeah.
we have kids that play mm-hmm. in our front yard, and they could have been hit. And you could have killed them,
mm-hmm.
and then I would kill you. I really would. Like I would.
But yeah, I did go inside, and Evan, who, you know, we're still trying to, so little background, Evan is, you know, our son that we adopted a couple of years ago. So we're still trying to teach him lots of good habits. And one of those is look both ways before you cross the street. That's a, something we talk about every time. But I definitely reinforced that to him. Like, this is why you have to look both ways. Like, you never know what's coming down that street. Not everybody is watching, you know, out for you. Like, you have to watch out for yourself.
Well, I mean, like, it also concerns me because that's where, like, Ella will just sit down and kind of, like, draw and play right at the... Anyway, I'm staying on this too long.
Go ahead. No, I was going to say, I remember you started with, like, you know, I think you were alluding to, you know, hearing about some of the more interesting patients.
Yeah.
And so staying totally like HIPAA compliant, like I won't go into any unnecessary detail, but, you know, some of the things, some of the patients that we see or some of the different ways that brain injuries are caused, we do see quite a bit of car accidents. Specifically, lots of motorcycle accidents, people not wearing their seatbelts, people not wearing helmets, drinking and driving, we get brain injuries, drug abuse, we get brain injuries. And then, so there's two different kinds of strokes. There's an ischemic stroke and there's a hemorrhagic stroke. So ischemic strokes, from what I understand, are usually caused by a blockage. So that would be like high cholesterol, high blood pressure, leads to a blood clot that goes to your brain and you have a stroke. And I'm by no means like a stroke expert, but I'm speaking, I know more, you know, nutrition wise about stroke. We can talk more about that. But just to kind of give you some idea. And then the other kind of stroke, like a hemorrhagic stroke, typically causes it, it comes from head trauma, like hitting your head. So we get a lot of people that have fallen and have hit their heads. So I've seen, you know, people that have fallen off of a horse and hit their heads. And it's just, I don't think people really realize how debilitating a head injury can be. We see people that have lost the ability to eat by mouth, so they have to get fed through a PEG tube. So I assist with that.
And explain what a PEG tube is.
So a PEG tube is a small surgical procedure where you get basically a port opening in your abdomen that goes into your stomach where we can inject a formula. So think of the equivalent of like injecting it inshore into your abdomen to make sure you're getting enough protein, calories, vitamins and minerals and water to keep you alive, because you can't eat by your mouth, because, and it could be maybe you've lost the ability to swallow. Maybe your brain doesn't know how to do that anymore. And we also see people who have lost the ability to speak, people who've lost the ability to walk. So, you know, your brain is in control of all of those things. And so these are, you know, things that can happen when you get a brain injury. And sometimes you're doing everything right and it happens to you. And sometimes there are things that you can do to prevent a brain injury, like eating healthy and wearing a seatbelt and wearing a helmet.
Not riding a motorcycle.
Yes.
Yeah. And it seems like there's a different types of heartbreaking. I mean, of course, it's tough to see. I'm imagining, or from the conversations that we've had, it's tough to see anyone in this type of situations. Mm-hmm. Others you have less empathy, I would have less empathy for, because like you've made lots and lots of poor decisions. You're 60 years old. Mm-hmm. Like you've been in and out of the hospital. They've told you multiple times. Mm-hmm. Here's how you can improve.
And I think that's the hardest part of my job. So I feel like, you know, I do empathize with patients. Every patient that I see has had some kind of trauma, significant trauma happen to them. So I do empathize with that. I think what makes my job most rewarding, I'll start with that, is seeing patients who want to make changes. Seeing mm-hmm. patients, okay, please tell me what to eat. Please, you know, let me work with physical therapy to get stronger and to get better. And, you know, who have a, you know, come to Jesus moment, if you will, and want to do better. The hardest part of my job is people who are not yet ready to change. And I personally would love to learn more about, you know, the behavioral process and psychology. And I actually just scheduled Abbott to come give us an in-service about motivational interviewing, you know, like how, and I do feel like I'm pretty familiar with that, but basically motivational interviewing is, you know, walking patients through, like, what are your personal goals and what are your barriers and how can we work through those? Because to me, the hardest part is when I have a patient who's had a stroke and, you know, they have high cholesterol and they have high blood pressure, but they still, you know, want to add salt to all of their food, and they still want to, you know, eat fast food all day, every day. And, you know, I do feel like I'm overgeneralizing a bit, but basically they're not ready.
I mean, it sounds right for some of the people.
Yes, there are some patients who are not ready to make healthful changes to get better. And that's so hard for me to see. You know, you're just asking for another stroke. You're asking for another heart attack. You're asking to continue to be hospitalized. And it's hard for me to accept that quality of life for them.
Right. And I guess it doesn't just affect that person. They have to leave the hospital at some point. They'll just stay there, and sometimes they stay there and die. But many times it's a rehab hospital. They do enough to get them out, but if they're not making good choices.
And that's a really good point. I feel like I've, you know, run into some people who will say things like, oh, you know, we're all going to die sooner or later. Might as well eat what I want. And it's like, okay, that is true. But if you, you know, let's say you have a heart attack and you die and that's how you want to die, fine. But that's if you're lucky. And I hate to say it, but I tell my kids this, I feel like probably more than I should. They're like, there are worse things than dying. Okay. And so, you know, I think for me, it's all about quality of life. And if you're choosing to have a quality of life where not able to be active, where you're in and out of the hospital, where you're a burden on your friends and your family members, that's worse than death for me.
Yeah, I mean, it seems very selfish to, especially for me. Like, let's say that I continue to make terrible health choices over and over and over, did it for decades, and I get to a point where I'm 50 years old, or 60 years old, and you're having to take care of me full time. So you've got to drop out of the workforce. Or let's say that you're not able to drop out of the workforce. So you're working part time, and then Ella's got to help out. And it's a burden on everyone, and it doesn't allow your close family to flourish.
For sure. And I think people really don't think about those logistics. I don't think people want to think about those logistics. What happens to me when I've become so debilitated that, you know, like, let's say, and I've seen this happen before, you know, like, you're about, you know, 220, I'm 110 pounds. And let's say, you know, you have a stroke and you're no longer able to toilet yourself. And
I don't think about that.
And we're having to figure out the logistics of how your 110 pound wife is going to get you on and off the toilet, you know, and essentially wipe you, you know, because you're not able to do that for yourself. So really, I think people need to think about, okay, you're not just, you know, going to have a heart attack and die. You're not just going to have a stroke and die. You might become so debilitated that your family is going to have to figure those logistics out. And again, I probably am, you know, a little, what's the right word?
Jaded.
Because these are the things that I deal with on a day-to-day basis, but they do happen.
Oh, it's, well, and I shouldn't have said jaded. Realistic is the actual word.
Yeah. And I mean, there are things, you know, we call, there are non-modifiable risk factors. So sure, there are things that we can't control, like our age and our gender and our family dynamics, like our genetic makeup. You know, sometimes you're doing everything right and you have a stroke anyway. Sure. But about 75% of the risks are called modifiable risk factors that we can control, which is our diet and our exercise and how much alcohol that we're drinking. And, you know, are we taking our medication?
Travis, what are you talking about? I mean,
we're drinking. Pointing fingers around here.
No. I was saying, like, he's done a good job. Like, he's made good choices.
Well, good.
Oh, I cut out a bunch of drinking.
Okay. Yeah.
I really enjoy drinking, but, you know, I'd rather sleep better.
There you go. Yeah, absolutely.
Cut a bunch of drinking out, so.
Well, I'm proud of you. Good job.
And then he comes to work someday, he's like, I slept fucking great.
Yeah, absolutely. But I definitely noticed that as well. I mean, I definitely, on occasion, like to have my cocktails. I'll probably have one tonight because we have a date night this evening. But I've noticed that if I have like more than two beverages, I'm not going to sleep. And I consciously sometimes on special occasions will be like, okay, I'm going to have this third cocktail. I guess I'm not, you know. And then when I'm up at 3, I'm like, okay, I deserve that, you know. So I definitely absolutely think it affects I'm sleeping amongst many other things.
Yeah. Well, I know it's easy to get into those habits. And it's difficult to figure out what you're doing or why you feel so tired.
Right.
Because, I mean, for trans to realize that and then make a change, 95% of people don't do that. They're like, meh, I'm going to keep going. But I know I've been there before, and especially when COVID first hit, like, I was drinking a lot.
I think
more.
Everybody was.
Or even in college, it's like far too much.
Right.
All the time.
Yeah. And I think that's also important for people to realize too. Like, just because you have a bad habit in the moment, and we all do, like, I have areas of improvement for sure. Everybody does. Is that, you know, there, and again, there is always area of room for improvement, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And just because you're like, oh, like, what's the point? You know, I already, maybe I smoke and I drink alcohol or whatever it is. You can always change. Like, one of my favorite quotes is, every passing moment is a chance to, like, turn it all around. And it's like, it's kind of cheesy, but it's true. And yep. I think that you just have to make a decision of, you know, not tomorrow, not next month, not the new year, I'm going to do better. But, like, starting right now, like, starting today, how can I do better? And you're not going to, most people are not going to change overnight. Most people don't cold turkey quit smoking or cold turkey quit drinking. And sure, some people do. Absolutely. That's great. But for most people, it's a series of stages of change. Mm-hmm. It's a series of, okay, I'm going to cut back gradually and I might relapse some, but overall, I'm just going to continue to cut back until I get to a healthy point, and then, you know, kind of ebb and flow from there.
Yeah. And I, to kind of put that, what you said, into different verbiage, I think when people have a relapse or they try to do something cold turkey or they try to make these big changes and it doesn't work, they're like, well, I failed. I'm a failure. I'm never going to be able to do this. Whereas they could be like, well, I was drinking 6 Cokes a day, or I was only drinking Coke during the day and I wasn't drinking water, because there are people out there who only drink Coke. And then you'd be like, okay, well, I'd stopped drinking Coke for a week. That's great. I did that. I know I can do it. And now I'm only drinking 2 Cokes a day.
Right. And that's a huge change. And yeah, those small changes are going to make a huge difference over the impact of your life.
I mean, that's the thing when it just comes to that mentality of I guess, accepting failure for what it is.
For sure. And I also feel like that's why, you know, so-called fad diets don't typically work, is that, you know, people want to make these huge drastic changes for a short period of time.
Because they need a huge drastic change.
Yeah.
Because over, like, let's say that you let things go for 20 years.
Right.
You need big changes, but you're not going to get there like that.
And you're probably not going to get it done in 30 days. It's probably going to take years, and you're going to have to tackle one thing at a time. And so maybe it's going to be, this month I'm going to work on drinking more water. And then maybe once I check that off, next month it's going to be, I'm going to incorporate a fruit and vegetable into my, you know, diet every day. And then once I check that off, maybe the month after that, it will be, I'm going to work out more. But it's for most people, those gradual changes over a long period of time is what's going to be most successful.
Yeah. I mean, I can even say working out, like with David now for 9 months, 10 months, really I've worked out vigorously for most of my life. I took 1 year off, but then even with working out vigorously and pursuing rugby at an elite level year round.
I wouldn't even say you took a year off. That was very involuntary.
Well, I mean, I was talking about when I was 18. 19.
Oh, I was talking about when you broke your leg.
Oh yeah. That was involuntary. And I still worked out. I still worked out 3 days a week.
Of course you did.
And then I restricted my diet because I was like, I'm not gaining weight. Because if I gain weight, it's going to be bad weight. And I dropped from like 215. I want to say it's like 195, maybe 2. Oh, no, it was like 199. And that's when I was like, oh, okay, I need to eat because I've lost 16 pounds.
Right.
But yeah, so like I was saying, even with having a long history of working out, it's still gradual. Like, I feel like I'm getting back to where I was 2 years ago, maybe something like that physically, but it's been a grind, and getting up every morning at 5 a.m., going to the gym, and not just like going through the motions of working out.
Right.
Or not even like pushing it kind of hard, like getting after it every day, 5 days a week for 10 months. And I'm still not to where I was prior to breaking my leg.
Mm-hmm. And you may never be, but
I'm not going to accept that just yet. But for me, I enjoy the grind, and I've learned to do that. And I don't expect everybody to just immediately have that same mindset, because I got really lucky that I got to watch my dad work out, and he would, like, I was bench pressing. I think dad asked David the other day, I want to say he had me working out when I was like 3 years old or 4 years old. So I was like, this is what you do. This is normal.
Mm-hmm. This is why our kids have a personal trainer.
That's right.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. So they see me working out, or like they see me get up in the morning. Mm-hmm. They see me coming back from the gym. And now for the first time, both kids were like, what are we going to work out with David? Like, unprompted.
Right, yeah.
Within 24 hours of each other. So I was pretty excited about that.
For
and now
sure.
They're both getting up around 5:30 in the morning on their own without an alarm. Like, Ella hears my truck, and then she's getting up now. She's just getting up, getting ready. She's 7 years old.
Yeah.
Getting ready by herself and eating breakfast, brushing hair. Now, the reason she does that is so that she can play Minecraft.
Hey, you got to find what motivates you.
That's
for
right.
Sure.
As long as it works.
But it works. Yeah. And what's funny is, like, when, like, this morning she slept, or last night she slept in our bed. So this morning she didn't get up on her own because she didn't hear the truck. And, like, it's just like having a normal 7 year old. Like, she, like, I have to dress her or be right there.
I don't think that's a normal 7 year old.
I don't have to. Okay. Probably not a normal 7 year old thing. But, like, she wants me there the whole time. Mm-hmm. And, like, I know that she's fully capable of doing these things herself. And, like, she even, when she's doing these things by herself, she takes the bowl and she puts it next to the sink. Mm-hmm. But, like, when I help her with breakfast, she leaves a plate right there for me to move, which I do every time.
Of course you do.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think of diet. Okay, so we talked a lot about diet, nutrition, potential injuries. When it comes, like, let's say someone hears this conversation and, like, you know what? I want to make some changes. How do I get in contact with a dietitian?
That's a really good question. So if you do have some kind of critical illness, whether it be, you know, diabetes, obesity, heart disease, usually your doctor can make a referral to a dietitian. If you just kind of want one because you just want to get healthier, you probably want to look for, you know, like a private practice dietitian, as they're used to seeing more of the general population, where I am an inpatient dietitian, so I only see patients that are in a hospital. I think if you go to eatright.org, you can search a local dietitian. I'll give a shout out to Alyssa Lukemeyer. I don't know how to spell her name entirely, but she is a local outpatient dietitian. I believe her company is Food for Success, and so she will see outpatients to work on just, like, you know, general healthy eating.
Yeah, and I know for years, and probably still to this day, people will come to you.
Yes, and ask
my sister. Go ahead.
Just at this point in my career, like, you have to be pretty VIP for me to visit with you. That's not because, you know, I don't necessarily want to spend my time doing that, but it's just, you know, my full-time job is, you know, working in a hospital and seeing inpatients, and I feel like I'm not going to give you due diligence, especially if I'm your friend, especially if I'm your family member. I think that there's something to be said about seeing a professional that you don't know, you know, to give you nutrition advice, versus, you know, your sister or your mother or your friend giving you nutrition advice, even if they are credentialed. And especially because I'm used to working in an inpatient setting versus outpatient setting, I'd much rather get you into contact with someone who can work with you, you know, on that basis and follow up with you and treat you as a professional. Whereas if you're my friend, you know, I might not treat you as I would, you know, a typical patient.
Mm-hmm. You're also not going to write meal plans for me either.
No. Definitely not.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, again, I'm very lucky. Not only did I have parents who were focused on nutrition and exercise, but I happen to have a wife, I don't know if you know this, who's a dietitian and makes excellent food.
Mm-hmm.
So I have my meal plans
yes.
out for me. So everything is, I shouldn't say the healthiest food. It's healthier.
It is,
healthier
yeah.
options.
I mean, yeah, and he was talking about me. Y'all didn't get that. But, yeah, and I do remind him all the time how lucky he is to have a dietitian who does mm-hmm. plan out the meals. And I really think that people take that for granted, too. It's not just like I whip out, you know, a healthy meal every night. It does take planning, and it does take time, and it does take, you know, every week I have to sit down and plan out, okay, what do I want to cook next week, and where are those recipes, and what are the ingredients, and let's put together a shopping list, and who's going to go to the grocery store. So it does take work, but I absolutely think that it's worth it, because when I don't do that, we just all come home and what's for dinner? Oh, I don't know. And I feel
macaroni
like
macaroni and cheese.
Right.
Hot dogs,
and exactly. Yeah. And I feel like that's where healthy eating falls through, because you're going to go for what's quick and convenient because everybody's hungry. So, yeah, it's going to be macaroni and cheese or frozen pizza or, you know, leftovers or, you know, once in a blue moon, maybe we'll go get some fast food. So I feel like it does take getting into a habit of putting in the work to plan out your meals, to prep your meals. So that when you get home from work, you know what you're making. You already have the ingredients. You already have the recipe, and just setting yourself up for success.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how other people do groceries, but this also helps, would definitely help me. But something that you do is you have your grocery list up on the microwave available
mm-hmm.
at all times
mm-hmm.
to add things to them.
Right.
Throughout the week
mm-hmm.
so that when you go to do the actual meal planning, and like when it comes to meal planning, I think people think that it's this intricate, like specialized thing, but really it's being focused or taking time to focus on getting the recipe that you want, or like figuring out three or four different meals. And for us specifically, it's like one vegetarian, one chicken,
mm-hmm.
one fish,
and usually like one pasta dish
yeah,
or some combination of thereof. Yeah, and it doesn't, you know, and you don't have to, you know, have a dietitian to figure that out. And usually, like, I ask my kids, or I ask, you know, you, like,
mm-hmm.
what do you want for dinner? And
spinach and gelato.
And then trying to make a healthy version of that. So, you know, if the kids want pizza, I'm gonna plan out, you know, making the pizza crust from scratch and making the pizza sauce from scratch. And I won't add vegetable to their pizza because they won't eat it, but I will, you know, add it to ours. And then, okay, I'm going to serve their pizza with fruit because they don't have, you know, added vegetables. So, you know, taking those foods that are very normal and serving them in a healthy way that actually tastes good. And trust me, that's having kids, that's very challenging, but it is doable.
Yeah, because kids are kids. And
mm-hmm.
it doesn't matter if the kids have a dietitian for a mom,
mm-hmm.
like they're still going to be kids. So
yes. mm-hmm.
also to me, one thing that that you do a really good job of is continuing to offer these food specifically to Ella.
Yes.
Evan will eat just about
yeah.
anything.
Yeah. So Ella is definitely our picky eater. I know that she'll eat fruit, so I pretty much serve fruit with literally every meal that I give her, because I know that's the one healthy thing that she'll eat. And yeah, and most of the time she won't eat, you know, most things that I cook, but I still put it in front of her. I still encourage her to try it. I still encourage her to take a bite. I'm not going to make a fight out of it. But just, you know, offering it to her. And sometimes we find things that motivate her to eat it, and other times she goes and gets herself a bowl of cereal. But you know, you just try. That's all
and
you can do.
Yeah, and again, it's those little small changes. Like, feel like as a parent, like if I didn't have you, I'd be freaking out. Like, she just doesn't eat anything, and when she does, it's unhealthy all the time. So, like you said, we find the one thing. Like, she'll eat grapes, or
mm-hmm.
she'll eat blackberries or raspberries.
Yeah.
She didn't really even used to eat those things, but you've introduced them so much now
mm-hmm.
that she's starting to eat a variety of fruits instead of just like one fruit.
Right. And I think I read, you know, one time that it takes children specifically like 10 to 14 times of trying a new food before they like it. And I think had I not read that, I would be so frustrated that, you know, you've tried this three times and, you know, you're still telling me you don't like it, or, you know, we keep trying this and it's not working. But knowing that it takes that many times for their taste buds to adjust, for them to be receptive to it, is means I'm not taking it personally. Like, that's just normal.
Yeah.
Kid behavior.
It also takes that many times to get in contact with a prospect to book a meeting. So it's like a 6-month process. And I imagine it's the same thing for kids.
Right.
So you want them to like a food, cook it once a week.
Mm-hmm.
Know that they're not going to like it for 10 to 14 times, but 6 to 9 months from now, you've got yourself a meeting, or you've got yourself your kids actually eating the food.
Right. Yeah. And then, you know, and preparing it in different ways too, yeah. I think helps.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's true. So nutrition, diet, we figured out the best diet, or we should have said we figured out the best diet. Fruits and vegetables, whole grains, or actually, if you could kind of give it an ideal.
Sure, yeah. So to recap, what you want your diet focused around is lean protein, like chicken, fish, doesn't always have to be animal-based, could be, you know, like nuts are a good source of protein, peas are a good source of protein, most whole grains have protein. So lean protein, then your whole grains, which would be, you know, like your oats or your brown rice or, I'm trying to think, you know, we have a gluten-free household, so whole grains are not, we don't have a plethora right. of those.
Yeah.
And then, you know, lots of fruits and vegetables, and then your healthy fats, so like, you know, your avocados, also, again, nuts, you know, your healthy cooking oils. So I would say that would be, you know, if you do tolerate dairy, not everybody does, but if you do tolerate dairy, I would say, you know, some full fat dairy is okay, but for the most part, your everyday dairy, like your milk, you know, should be low fat and lower in saturated fat.
When you say low fat, you mean like 1%, 2%?
Right.
Not the low fat water.
Yeah, not like, it doesn't right. have to be skim milk, but yeah, 1 or 2%. Yeah, so lean protein, whole grains, fruits and vegetables, dairy optional. That's, you know, that's basically it. And so just making sure you're getting variety of those every day. And for me, my kind of checklist, especially when I'm putting together my recipes, when I'm putting together my meal plan, is that every meal I want to have a source of protein. I want to have a fruit or vegetable and most likely a starch as well. So that would look like, you know, if you have like, say, chicken spaghetti, you know, chicken's your protein, pasta is your starch. So that would be another whole grain. Like if you chose a whole grain pasta, like the chickpea pasta, that's a good example. And then, you know, your spaghetti sauce, you could technically count that as a vegetable, but if you wanted bonus points, you could add in some mushrooms or a side salad, and that would be your, like, check, I got a vegetable, check, I got a protein, and check, I have my, like, starch, and preferably your starch does have some kind of extra fiber.
And one of the things you talked about was healthier foods or healthier options. So for me, an example of that is spinach enchiladas.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of normal enchiladas with beef or cheese, you substitute that with spinach and some cheese.
Yeah, so that's one of, I don't know why it's one of my favorite things that I make. I really don't.
We hear about it a lot.
Because it's like so super duper easy. But yeah, it's basically just like frozen spinach that I pop in the microwave. And then I do make the enchilada sauce from scratch. And I use corn tortillas. And full disclosure, I do use some Velveeta, which I know that's super processed and not the healthiest thing, but it's spinach enchiladas, so, you know, you got to have a balance. But yeah, I mean, you love them. So, and Evan loves the cheesy version of those.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, and then I'm just trying to think of a few things just to help.
One of my favorite things is when we do, like, a healthy version on a Frito pie. And sometimes I'll do a vegetarian version where I'll make like a vegetarian chili where, you know, I'm using like zucchini and corn and beans, and I make, you know, a chili out of that. And some people are like, that's not chili. But, you yeah. know, I do also make a version of that where I add ground beef. And I think one of your friends, Chris Eldridge, was like, oh, my God, like, this is some of the best chili I've ever
right.
had. And so I think people would be really surprised
yeah.
that even though it's not traditional chili, like, it's still very flavorful. It still tastes really good. And it's really satisfying. So I take that, you know, ground beef with the added vegetables, and we use a really lean ground beef, And then I will use a few fritos and we'll add, you know, avocado, and we'll usually add some kind of, you know, salsa. And instead of sour cream, I use plain yogurt. So you get this like really, you know, piled on, like fantastic, colorful looking dish. You know, I pickle my own red onions and I'll sprinkle some of those on top, and that adds color, maybe some jalapenos. And it's just, it's super satisfying. And again, you know, so sometimes I am incorporating in moderation those unhealthy foods like Fritos or Velveeta. But when you're smothering that in vegetables, like, you can feel really good about it.
Yeah, for sure. And then when you're at the grocery store, look for like tomato sauce instead of the normal tomato sauce where they add lots of extra salt, mm-hmm. find the no salt added.
That's right. Yeah. And HEB does a great job of offering that. I feel like I hear a lot of people say like, oh, don't get canned vegetables, they're terrible for you. But yeah, if you're getting no salt added tomatoes or no salt added beans or no salt added corn, like, that's a really healthy source of fiber and nutrients.
Mm-hmm. We got a few minutes left. I would like to talk about some things that you enjoy doing. Yoga.
Yes. So I do love doing yoga. I've been doing yoga since I was 21, so that's going to age myself, but I've been doing yoga for 15 years now. And thanks to Will's support, I think next year I'll be getting yoga teacher certified. So I'm saying it on here so he can help be held accountable.
That's right. It's on the internet now. Yeah.
So, I would love to get yoga teacher certified. And I don't even know if – I don't think I'll teach yoga right away. I just really think I want – to challenge myself. I feel like I've been doing yoga for so long that now when I do go to yoga, some classes still challenge me, but for the most part, I feel like I'm going through the motions, and I really want to know, like, what's the next step? What's the next level? And I really feel like, you know, for Will, he loves lifting weights. I hate lifting weights. So again,
we got a sweat day.
We do have
March
a sweat
13th
day.
I'm going
to try. Yes. I'm going to try. But, you know, again, you have to find something that works for you. So yoga works for me. It's been working for years. And I think there's lots of positive benefits to yoga. I think it absolutely helps with my stress levels and helps with my sleep. And it just, honestly, it helps me feel more confident in my body. You know, mm-hmm. the more yoga that I do, the better that I feel about myself. So yeah, I do love yoga, and I do love hiking. And I feel like as a family, we're doing a better job of getting back in the habit of hiking. I feel like we were in a really good habit and it kind of fell off. Mm-hmm. And so now, like, once a month, I'm starting to schedule like family hike days where we all go hiking together. And that way I can still do something that I love, but spend time with you guys as well. And then, yeah, water activities. I love living in Texas. I love going to the river. I love going to the lake, to the beach, anywhere that there's water. Now that we've had kids, we don't feel like we do that as often, but, you know, still try to plan those family activities where we can do that together.
Mm-hmm. Wine drinking too?
Yes, I do love
and
me some wine.
A hobby
yes.
that we both partake in?
Yes, and Mediterranean diet, you know, supports that, so.
Yeah. And then I don't want to put the words in your mouth, but like what I see you wanting to retire to would be to be a...
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, if I could teach yoga and like talk about wine at the same time, that would be amazing. And I have found that other people that actually do that. They, you know, teach a wine class and while they're teaching, or they teach a yoga class and while they're teaching the yoga class, they're talking about wine. So you're learning about wine while you're working out. And then afterwards you have a glass of wine. I'm like, this is amazing.
And when you work out... and get to have a drink afterwards.
It hits you real hard.
I wasn't going to go there. I was going to say it feels good. Like, I earned this.
Yeah.
Because like with rugby, like you get after it for 80 minutes, and especially when you win, especially when you mm-hmm. do good and like stiff arm somebody in the ground and score a try. Mm-hmm. That beer tastes so fucking good.
Right. So that is my retirement plan is to teach yoga and talk about wine/drink wine.
Yes. Yeah. I think we're right at an hour, so I got two questions for you.
Okay.
I almost forgot about them.
I can already tell I'm not going to like this question.
If you had the money, the power, and the ability to bring dinosaurs back, would you do it?
Absolutely not.
Why not?
Not going to happen. I feel like there's a reason they're extinct. I feel like they would just squash us like a little bug and just like trample right all over us and all of our things.
But you don't let them out.
Well, how sad would that be?
You make a theme park.
How sad would that be?
Just bring back a small little cute one.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I don't want to bring animals back to enclose them and capture them and keep them trapped. Okay, that's just mean.
Well, then what if you created a safari? and you had brachiosaurus or
there's a
like
compromise
that.
There you yeah. just basically want to recreate Jurassic Park.
That's right. Yeah. The other one is, if you could have any superpower, which one would it be?
To never get sick.
That's specific.
Yes. I mean, I don't get sick very often, but when I do, I just like, oh, like I just feel like there's, I just feel so helpless and I can't do anything. And I just, oh, mm-mm.
Okay. Not what I was expecting. That's a unique answer.
Yes. If I could just have the rest of my life where I'm in perfect health. And again, it's about,
that's kinda
it's
awesome.
All about quality of life.
That's
you know,
right.
I have my best quality of life when I feel good and when I'm not sick. And I recently, you know, our kids started public school and I felt like we were sick all the gosh darn time. And I feel like it impacted every area yeah. of our lives. It impacted our work. We were missing work because we were sick or our kids were sick. We were missing, you know, get togethers and activities. We were missing workouts, you know. So, yeah.
But also think about that. Like, you could live to be really old
mm-hmm. yep.
because like old folks tend to die from like pneumonia. Mm-hmm. Or flu
yep.
or things like that besides
so
I mean you could still fall and like mm-hmm. break a hip but interesting
mm-hmm.
I didn't think about that mm-hmm. That's a good answer. Any parting words for everyone?
No, just thank you guys for having me. This was honestly funner than I thought it was gonna be.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I only did it because I love you so much.
Yes, much appreciated. Love you too. Hill Country Tech Guys offer best-in-class support and aim to provide a world-class customer experience for each and every one of our clients. We offer managed IT support, cybersecurity tools and consultation, along with the ability to handle all of your project or infrastructure needs. If you are interested in learning more, please visit our website, YouTube, or social media pages.